We have two scriptures today. First one comes from the book of Isaiah, book 60, chapters 1 through 5. It's also on page 738 in your pew hymnals. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples. But the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. Nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes and look around. They all gather together. They come to you. Your sons shall come from far away, and your daughters shall be carried on their nurses' arms. Then you shall see and be radiant. Your heart shall thrill and rejoice. Our second scripture comes from Matthew 5:14 through 16. That's page 958 in your hymnal, or Bible. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hidden. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under a bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven.
There's been a lot of heaviness upon us these last few months. Really, I guess this last year. We've seen a spike in hatred. It starts right at the top and cuts through every segment of society. A year ago, I could not have imagined that the KKK would have held a white supremacy rally and ended it killing a woman in the streets. There's been so much fear. Whether it's fear about our immigrant brothers and sisters, dreamers who proclaim undocumented and unafraid, and yet I have to admit I'm afraid for them. I'm afraid for their parents and their family members. I've been afraid a lot this year, a lot. Or I think about the fear of losing healthcare and what skyrocketing insurances could do to our nation. As a pregnant lady, it makes me really nervous. One, about my own delivery, but perhaps more importantly, about the world I'm bringing another child into. These have been dark days. Our nation pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord, and only months later, multiple hurricanes pounded upon our nation. First, flooding Houston, and then hitting Florida and Louisiana and the U.S. Virgin Islands, and finally, the motherlode herself, Maria, hitting Puerto Rico, where still to this day, there are Puerto Ricans without power, scrambling to get food and clean water. We have seen dark days. Darkness has cast its shadow upon us. The city known for the brightest of lights went dark a couple of weeks ago when a man terrorized our nation, waging war on concertgoers who wanted nothing more than to experience a night out with friends and family. A couple weeks later, it's still difficult to process this. I have so many questions in my head. How did this happen? And how did we, as a society, let it happen? Why aren't we stopping this? Why aren't we doing something? I guess I've asked all these questions over and over again in the last year. How has this happened? I start to feel like the darkness is just gonna overcome us. I mean, whether we're still worried about family members getting out of Puerto Rico, or in our case, one that has decided to go back, or we're grieving the Las Vegas massacre, or we're scared that World War III is impending upon us, or we're just worried about this divide that keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger in our nation, we are cast in darkness. I keep wondering, are we gonna survive this? Can we survive this as a nation? Well, the Israelites had been in great darkness. They were exiled and lost. They were all but annihilated, hardly any of them left. They knew darkness, the darkness of a nearly wiped out and forgotten people. Did they think they had lost their way? Of course they did. They made that clear. Did they really believe they would make it to the promised land? I mean, they'd waited 40 years, but the truth was their hope was all but extinguished. Did they have any idea what the future ahead of them would be? They doubted everything, themselves, their leaders, even their God. But as we said with the kids this morning, in the darkness, even the smallest of lights shines brightly. Arise, arise, your light has come. Nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes and look around. They all gather. They come to you. Your sons shall come from far away, and your daughters shall be carried on their nurses' arms. Then you shall see and be radiant. Your heart shall thrill and rejoice. Isaiah describes this darkness that covers the earth, the darkness that covers the people, and juxtaposes that darkness with the light of the Lord. Arise, arise, your light has come. You know, we usually read this passage in the season of Advent because we're preparing ourselves for the coming of Christ's light, the coming of that light in the world. And so it's during the season of Advent that we're most aware of the darkness among us. The liturgical year coincides with the earth's satellite around the sun, and the days get darker and darker. That's helped by the fact that we change our clocks back in November, so remind yourselves in just a few weeks. There's literally more darkness in our days, so we can't help but long for light, for the literal light. But we're not so dissimilar to those Israelites. We know we have our own privileges. We aren't exactly starving out in the wilderness, wasting away for generations. But we know, we've acknowledged it, we are living in some dark days. And many of us, certainly myself included, are often overcome by it. I just get overwhelmed with this sense of sadness, this feeling of helplessness. It's like this gloomy gray has sort of rested upon us, and I can't quite see out of it. And then we hear those words of the prophet Isaiah commanding us to rise up. Arise. The light of the Lord is upon you. You shall see through that dark gloom or the smoky fires of ash. You shall see and be radiant. Now, you couple this passage with the words of Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew, you are the light of the world, a city on a hill that cannot be hidden. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under a bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others. I really like this passage. See, in the Gospel of John, it's all about Jesus, right? Jesus is the one who shines. Jesus is the light of the world. John's got a high Christology. That means that the writer of the Gospel of John equates Jesus directly with God. Whereas in the Synoptic Gospels, in Mark and Matthew and Luke, we see a little bit of a lower Christology. So in the Gospel of John, we get a Jesus who does all the work for us. Pretty nice, right? Jesus is most definitely the light. In fact, the Gospel of John is even called the signs gospel because all the signs point to Jesus. You know, the often recited John 3:16, it's Jesus who is the sacrificial lamb killed to save those who believe in him. Jesus is the bread of life. He's the way. He's the vine, and he is the light. But Matthew's Jesus doesn't say that. In Matthew's gospel, it's not, I am the light of the world. It's, you are the light of the world. See, we sing, shine, Jesus, shine, because we want someone else to do the work for us. We want Jesus to do all the heavy lifting. We're tired. We're burnt out. Our light is all but gone. So we call out to Jesus, shine, Jesus, shine. But then Jesus says, no, you shine. It's your responsibility to shine the light. You are the light of the world. I hate when Jesus does this to us. Ugh. Because he's always doing this to us. He says, it's up to you. It's not about believing in me. It's about believing in yourselves. Ugh. It's not about Jesus' light. It's about our light. It's not about Jesus doing the work for us. It's about Jesus helping us to ignite our light, especially when we're feeling burnt out, and letting it shine. Jesus says we have it all. You are the light of the world. You are. Isaiah says, arise, your light has come. You shall see, and you shall be radiant. Now, it's not that we can do anything, any of this, without God or without Jesus. They are integral to our journeys. They're necessary for our shining. But what strikes me about both of these passages is this sense of empowerment. Yes, there is darkness in this world. Yes, there is. But we are called to shine a light amidst the darkness. We are called not to hide away, not to cover, not to keep our light only to ourselves so that we're the ones that get to see and we're the ones that get to experience it. No, we're called to shine. We're called to seek out the love, to share it, to shine a pathway out of the dark, to be, well, you know, a beacon. A beacon. So you all know that we're preparing for our fundraiser. It is 6 days away. It is our Beacon of Light celebration. And yes, it is our biggest fundraiser of the year. So yes, we would like you to come. And yes, we would like you to buy a ticket and bid on some auction items and then bring your friends and have them do the same. But as much as this is an important fundraising event, it is even more an important light shining opportunity. Why? Let me be more clear. This is our opportunity to be the beacon, to invite the community to see who we are, what we value, to stand proudly and let our light shine, to be the city on the hill. A couple of years ago, one of our honorees and I were talking, and he asked me this question. I still think about it. It struck me. He said, how do you survive here? I don't think he meant or thought that I or we are literally starving out in the wilderness. But he did wonder how a little church like ours could survive in Mega Church Central. His question was really, how do you survive in this community, surrounded by big, egoed, male, megachurch pastors? How do you survive? And it's a good question. I ask myself it a lot. How can I possibly fit in? How can our church? Because it's so easy to get lost in a place like the OC, most especially in the megachurch environment right here in Costa Mesa. We've got Calvary Chapel to the north, The Crossing to the south, Rock Harbor, which is like the hippest place in town. And I don't know if we're cool enough. How does this little church survive? And how do we survive with this progressive female pastor who stands up for all the things that are so darn unpopular? Well, it's not easy. That's the truth. It is not easy. We are a small church, and it's easy to get overwhelmed by that. There are so many times when I do wish that we had a big, booming church with an IT department to handle my computer problems, because I've been without a computer for a week and a half, and I wish that we had volunteer after volunteer to keep our ministries running. It is hard, and it's so easy to get down. I mean, I'm pulling teeth over here, guys, trying to get volunteers to do things. I lose sleep at night. I wonder why attendance is lower this year than last year, even though I think we're offering some of our best stuff, and I don't get it. We've got a strong music program led by two incredibly talented individuals, although I'm not allowed to say the word talented, so I don't know if I'm allowed to say gifted. They're hardworking, amazing musicians who both have doctorates. My goodness. We have so much to offer. But we have so many challenges. We don't completely fit in here in Orange County. We stick out. I can count on one hand the number of churches who are out there standing on street corners, marching with workers, standing in solidarity with immigrants, who fought for equal marriage when it really wasn't popular to do so. I have the hate mail to prove it. I just got a bunch of it last week. Or standing alongside our Muslim brothers and sisters or proclaiming that black lives really do matter. Something that should be so basic a concept that just this day gets pushed back. Racism is just on the rise. And despite all of that, this little church continues to stand. Somehow, it continues to shine. I told this story before, but I remember this one Advent many years ago. We stood outside our street corner every Wednesday to hold a candle and the times for peace. I know Alonso was with me a lot of those times. But there was this one evening. It was a December night, and it was cold by our California standards, and it was even drizzly. And nobody showed up. So, you know, I thought, I'm just going to call it a night and go home. I didn't want to stand out there by myself. But then one other person showed up. And so the two of us took our little candles and our umbrellas, and we stood outside on the corner and shined the light. Sometimes I feel like that story's a failure. It's so easy to get down on myself and wonder why more people didn't come. I ask questions like, don't they care? Don't they want to make a difference? Does any of this matter at all? But then I remember Jesus' words, where two or more are gathered. And I remember that it's not a numbers game. It's not about how big we are. It's about showing up and shining. And that's what we do together. Whether it's two of us or it's a whole church full of people, that's what we do. That's who we are. That's how we shine. No matter how difficult, no matter how frustrating, no matter how few, no matter how dark, we stand with Jesus. And we shine the light. And miraculously, despite even our own selves, that light doesn't get snuffed out. Nope, we just have to keep on coming back day after day, week after week. No matter who's here with us, we just come back and we listen to Jesus. And we believe the prophet Isaiah. And we light our candles, like the very peace candle that shines upon our altar this morning. That's what we do together. And that is why we are throwing this big party on Saturday. I know we've said it a million times. It is to raise money. It really is. Yes, it's also to have a good time together, to get all dressed up and feel fancy. But most importantly, it is to demonstrate to our community that we refuse to go silently into the night. We refuse to be absorbed in the darkness. When faced with injustice, we will stand and we will shine. It's our time to shine. And it's even our time to sparkle. Now, I know we don't do it alone. We know that in order to survive, we must find others who are brave enough to shine their light as well. That's why we honor people like Felicity Figueroa and Benjamin Vasquez and the organization MICA. I hope that you'll read up about all those folks. They're pretty amazing. We see their light. We need it. We are drawn to shine with them. Together, we make that light brighter. And we can all see a little bit more clearly. We can warm up the cold darkness. And sometimes we need that light to help ignite or even reignite our own flames. Out of exile, out of empire, out of darkness, we come together. And our light shines. We shine unapologetically, without fear, or maybe even with it, if we're honest, but boldly and bravely. We arise, for our light has come. In our radiance, we radiate the light of Christ, the light of God, the light that Jesus has commanded us to shine. Lift up your eyes and look around. They all gather. They come to you. You are the light of the world. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Amen.